when I first got the job, I was talking to the director of the Tennessee Human Rights Commission. And I asked her, I said, how many housing complaints do you get from Chattanooga? And she said, we don't get any at all, you know, hardly any. And I was like, well, that's great. That means Chattanooga is doing a really good job. And she said, no, that means that nobody in Chattanooga knows what housing discrimination is or how to report it.
James McKissick is the director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs for the City of Chattanooga. The office was created in 2005 with an important mission: to cultivate an environment of understanding, respect, and equality of rights for the diverse cultural populations of Chattanooga. Yet, since its inception, the office has been one of the lesser-known branches of the city government. So in our interview today, James explains the vision of the office and the programs they operate that are bringing equality and highlighting diversity within our city. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. Well, James, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so my guest today is James McKissick from the Office of Multicultural Affairs for the city, and that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about this department of the city that I have a feeling a lot of people don't know much about. I don't think I'd even heard of it before a couple of years ago, and so that's going to be the big topic. But you know, before we get into that, James, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Chattanooga, right? Or from the area, right?
I'm from the area. I grew up in Cleveland, Tennessee.
Yeah, just up the road.
I always have to claim my high school, Cleveland Raiders, Raiders for life. and after high school, I went to UTC and studied education.
Okay.
So I became a certified secondary English and language arts teacher. And I did not enjoy teaching that much. And this was the time period when President Clinton was talking a lot about National Service, AmeriCorps, Vista, those things. So I moved to Atlanta and joined an AmeriCorps program there. And I think I would pretty much say that that program changed my life. Growing up, I had never been exposed to too many people who worked in government or in the nonprofit sector. And as an AmeriCorps member, I learned a lot about those types of work and saw some really incredible role models who had committed their lives to working in communities. And I decided that was what I wanted to do. So after that, I went to graduate school at NYU and studied nonprofit and public management. Worked in Connecticut for a few years after that, and then moved back to this area in 2003.
Yeah, what brought you back to Chattanooga?
At that point, my dad was really sick, so I wanted to come back and be closer to him. But also, I was in the New York area during 9/11, and that affected me very much emotionally and socially. And just made me want to come back to a place, to home.
yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back when, you know, talking about your experience in Atlanta, you know, what did you do with the AmeriCorps? Like, I have a feeling, again, a lot of people have heard of the program, but what is that? What is it like actually on the ground working for AmeriCorps?
Well, there's so many different things you can do. The particular program that I was part of focused on helping people in inner city and urban communities get connected to the internet for the first time, helping them to learn how to use computers and technology.
And this was the late 90s?
This was okay. The late 90s. Yeah, yeah. So not only were many people, it was their first time connecting to the World Wide Web, but it was the first time that a lot of people were really connecting. And IBM was a partner of this program, so they would donate computers, we would refurbish them, and then we would take them to schools and homes and neighborhoods and teach people how to use them.
Yeah, that's incredible. I remember, so I was in middle school at that point, and
thank you for letting me feel
sorry.
Old.
But I remember teaching we got a computer lab in my middle school in the late 90s, and I remember teaching my teachers how to use the internet.
really?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I have a niece that lives with me now, and I was telling her about what I used to do. And she said, but you can't even, like, use the TV remote now. So how was it ever possible that you taught people how to use technology? So, yeah, we got a big laugh out of that.
That's great. That's great. Well, James is the executive or the director?
Just the director.
James is the director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs right here for our city government. And that's a position you took 3 years ago?
Yeah, it's been – I'm going into my fourth full year now, so 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I don't think a lot of people even know this department exists within the city government. You know, credit to the last, you know, to your efforts and under Mayor Burke, that I think it's been highlighted a lot more in the last 3 years. But it didn't start 3 years ago. You know, so maybe tell us a little bit about the history of the Office of Multicultural Affairs, you know, when it started and kind of why it was created to begin with.
Well, it started back in 2005. And back then there were a lot, I guess our racial issues and diversity and inclusion issues were more black and white focused. So this office was started to help to address some of the concerns of African Americans as it related to government, as it related to incidences of discrimination in the community. And it's been around for a while. I think I'm the third director of the office.
Okay.
And the other ones, you know, my predecessors were amazing people. I looked up to them in the community as I came back and began to work. But for me, it's really an honor to be in this role. And one of the things that we've done over the past few years is to try to make the office more external focused, to do things in the city and in the community to kind of move the needle over or forward when it comes to diversity and inclusion in Chattanooga.
Yeah, so I think, you know, hearing you describe it that way, it's almost as if, you know, it was started almost as a, hey, we need somebody to take care of some of the issues that are happening within our city. So really a lot of problems were brought to the department, whereas now you guys are far more externally focused. You're going more out into the community, being more intentional about helping, you know, solve any issues before they become problems.
Exactly. And we have a few program areas, like we focus on supplier diversity for the city, helping connect women and minorities to city bidding and city contract opportunities. We manage the city's internship program, which is fun, but it's also a way to introduce young people to public service, identify those that are doing a great job in their internship, and hopefully to bring them on as city employees.
Yeah.
We do fair housing, education, and outreach, and testing. And then we do other things that just relate to helping to address the climate in our city. So we organize an annual ML King Day of Service.
Yeah.
We do Halloween at City Hall.
Yeah.
Trick-or-treating.
My son's coming on Friday. Yeah.
Well, good. We do workshops and classes throughout the city and just, you know, overall help to promote a more inclusive Chattanooga into the future.
Yeah, I think that last line is really the key of what this office does. It's just is focused on making a more inclusive city. So, James, what's the vision of the Office of Multicultural Affairs?
My vision for the Office of Multicultural Affairs is really a vision for Chattanooga. It's that people are able to excel. People have opportunities. People are able to use their gifts and talents to the fullest, and that we have a city that helps facilitate that. So everything that we do is kind of leading to that goal or that vision. And I know over the past few months, I guess, you know, there's been a lot of rhetoric that has been around that I personally think has been used to divide people. So we do see that that it's more of a challenge now to work for a really inclusive Chattanooga and to work for a place where everyone can kind of feed into that vision. But that's what I want. I mean, when I took the job, the mayor said to me he didn't want anyone to ever say again, "What does the Office of Multicultural Affairs do?" So there are points when I think we do too much, but there are also points when like, people would come to me and say, I never knew this existed until you came and you started telling me about it, or you started doing programming.
Well, yeah, James, I think that, you know, the big reason I wanted to have you in today is to talk about all the different programs that the Office of Multicultural Affairs is running to really, you know, expand opportunity within our city, to open resources up to everybody within our city. And, you know, I've got your brochure right here in front of me and some of the outline, some of the programs. And then you guys can always go onto their website. If you go to chattanooga.gov and go to the departments, there's a drop down menu where you can select Office of Multicultural Affairs on there, and you can check out some of the stuff for yourself. But yeah, James, so I just want to go through some of these programs with you. Let me just start with which initiative of the Office of Multicultural Affairs are you most excited about?
Well, I think I'm most excited about one of our newest initiatives, which is our Fair Housing Initiative. As many people know, affordable housing is a big challenge in our city. But our office has put together a program that we've been doing for 2 years to focus on housing discrimination. So we spend lots of time throughout the year visiting fairs, festivals, speaking to community groups about how to identify housing discrimination and then how to report it. When I first got the job, I was talking to the director of the Tennessee Human Rights Commission. And I asked her, I said, how many housing complaints do you get from Chattanooga? And she said, we don't get any at all, you know, hardly any. And I was like, well, that's great. That means Chattanooga is doing a really good job. And she said, no, that means that nobody in Chattanooga knows what housing discrimination is or how to report it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually want to stop you there. Like, what is housing discrimination? What does that look like?
So there are protected classes when it comes to housing. And when you apply to rent housing or try to rent housing or purchase a home, sometimes you will be discriminated against based on your age, your race, your gender, family structure. And a lot of people don't realize it because they know that something is going on. And what we hear is a lot of people say, I felt kind of weird when this happened, but they didn't really know it was discrimination. So an example would be if, say, a couple wants to purchase a house. And actually, this happened to a friend of mine. She told me about it recently. She's a doctor. And she was in the market for a home. And the realtors were not willing to show her homes that were like over $300,000. They kept trying to steer her to certain neighborhoods. And a lot of times they say, we think you'll be happier here in this neighborhood. And that's housing discrimination, you know. So that's a more subtle type. A more blatant type is when you go apply for housing, and people tell you consistently that, you know, they don't have any units available. But if someone of another race or gender goes to apply for the housing, they are available at that point. They'll show them the home, show them the unit. And we see that occasionally here. Most of the complaints that we get in our office are related to disability issues in housing, and also a lot of discrimination against our immigrant communities here in Chattanooga. There's one example that we had last year where a couple was looking for an apartment. The gentleman is an immigrant. He's actually a professor.
Oh, wow.
And he called about the apartment and, you know, inquired. The apartment was no longer available. So later that afternoon, his wife came home, and she's a natural English speaker, just, you know. So she called about the apartment, and it was available. So he has a much heavier accent, and yeah, she doesn't. So that's an example of, you know, housing discrimination happening right here in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
We also had a more serious situation that was reported to us where there was a housing development that had lots of immigrant families that lived there. So over time, the families began to communicate with some of the African-American and white residents of the complex. and found out that they were being charged more rent consistently.
Oh, wow.
They were also being asked to put a certain sticker on their car to identify their cars only. And a lot of the children were reporting and letting the parents know that when they were having interactions with the leasing company, that the leasing company was using like racial slurs and making fun of them, and treating them pretty bad.
Yeah.
So in that situation, you know, we worked with them to report it to the legal authorities, and you know, they're working on taking care of it. But it's sad because, you know, in 2016, you would hope that a lot of the racism and discrimination would be going away, but it right. still does exist. And that's why it's so important for people to be educated, not only about how to identify it, but how that there are places where you can report it. I mean, you have rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I think what we do with fair housing is so important.
So the Office of Multicultural Affairs, when it comes to that sort of thing, is really just trying to raise awareness. And, you know, I'm wondering how much you guys have any kind of partnership with Chattanooga Organized for Action, just because I know they have a renter's rights course that they do, but they also just released a report about the lending inequality here in Chattanooga.
So we do work with Chattanooga Organized for Action in that we have organized a small network of housing providers and of organizations that are interested in housing. And we meet quarterly, so they're part of those meetings. When we have the meetings, we do things like learn about new housing rules. For example, it was recently made illegal to discriminate against someone in housing because they have a criminal background. And a lot of people are questioning and, you know, wanting to know more about that law and how it's implemented in the actual, you know, as you roll out actually offering housing, how do you implement that? How can you make sure that you're not discriminating and not going against the law?
I'm wondering, too, you know, if we were to kind of look at the next 10 years of Chattanooga's landscape and we ask the question of, you know, what are some potential challenges that our city's going to face for the next 10 years, low-income housing is definitely one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So how involved is your office in working out solutions or even thinking about solutions? Obviously, this is going to be a massive issue. It's going to require a lot of different players working together to help solve it. But like, how much should you guys have those conversations at all, just discussing low-income housing?
Well, I think we're part of discussions about it. Our role is more with the housing discrimination, and our economic development department with the city is having a lot of the more challenging conversations about affordable housing in Chattanooga. And they have a couple of programs that they've started to try to address some of those issues. But because it is a concern for so many people, you know, we are aware of it. We stay on top of the information about it. And we see ourselves as a resource for, you know, for the community. And even though we focus on the discrimination aspect, you know, that leads into the lack of access for affordable housing. If people are consistently discriminating and making decisions based on bias versus who can actually afford the apartment or the house, then, you know, that is a challenge for our city.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, in that last story, too, you mentioned immigration and immigrants. And I know that's another demographic that your office works with quite often, teaching ESL classes and even paths to citizenship. So talk a little bit about that program and how you guys work with immigrants and that sort of thing.
Well, immigrant integration is really important. And we as a city have become part of a couple of major national initiatives like Welcoming Cities and Cities for Citizenship. And we, out of our office, offer a few things. So we partner with Chattanooga State, and we offer ESL classes for anyone in the community who wants to learn English. We also have citizenship kiosks that we've set up in a lot of the public libraries. So if you visit and you want to know about what do I have to do to become a citizen, where do I get the paperwork, then we have all of that in a centralized location. And then the final thing that we do is we partner each year with the Tennessee Immigrant Refugee Rights Coalition out of Nashville. and help to put on a couple of citizenship clinics in Chattanooga each year. We have volunteer lawyers who come out and help people complete the paperwork. And when they come to this session, by the time that they leave, they're actually ready to bundle up their papers and mail them off to become a citizen. A lot of the things that we do, especially that, are just to make it fair and equitable, because many, many people, a lot of us don't know, but a lot of immigrants get taken advantage of when it comes to completing citizenship documents and doing lots of things related to the legal process. So even though the fee is about $600 or $700, if they come through this program, I think they end up only having to pay about $50 to have everything completed. And then there are scholarships to help with the $50 fee, too.
Yeah. How many immigrants in Chattanooga become citizens each year?
I actually don't have the exact number. I know that we serve in that program about 25 to 30 every time that we do it.
Yeah.
A lot of the immigrants that come to Chattanooga a lot of them are not able to be counted. Like, we don't have an exact count. And then, too, we have lots of people that come to Chattanooga as refugees, too. Mm-hmm. And many of them settle here, get their bearings, and then move to larger cities where there may be more, you know, more of a Syrian community or a Somali community. But we do have lots of people from other countries here in Chattanooga who are our neighbors, our friends, living life beside us. And there are some particular needs that they need that we help to address.
Yeah, and so do you work with other organizations in the city, like Bridge, pretty often for refugee services?
We do. We've worked with Bridge very often in the past. We work with La Paz a lot. We work with Chattanooga State's International Student Communities Organization. There's a really good network of organizations locally that help immigrants, and we try to be in good relations and good partnerships with all of them.
Yeah, and if you're, you know, interested, especially in the refugee question right now, you know, Bridge Refugee Services is a great organization to check out. And then, you know, my good friend of mine just started Mad Priest Coffee Roaster, so I'd like to give him a shout-out anytime I can. Michael Rice started Mad Priest Coffee Roasters with the whole goal of training and educating refugees that are resettled here in Chattanooga to equip them with skills that they can take and work somewhere beyond Mad Priest Coffee Roasters. So it's not just a low-level job. He's training them in marketing or business management and that sort of thing, so they have skills to move on from there. So.
And on International Refugee Day this year, Michael came up to City Hall and gave out coffee to kind of help raise awareness about refugees in our city. And people from Bridge Refugee Services were there, and some refugees were there too.
Well, I know, I think, you know, when I think about the times that I've heard about the Office of Multicultural Affairs, it actually has to do with the supplier diversity for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the city has millions of dollars worth of contracts with privately owned companies throughout the city and even beyond Chattanooga to do work here in the city. And I know a huge part of your job has been to expand the boundaries of who those people are getting those contracts. So can you talk a little bit about how you've been able to really expand who can apply for and even know about those government contracts?
Well, I think the know about is the thing that we really focus on. We've done tons of education and outreach to just bring the word to people that these opportunities exist within city government, but also teach people about the process to go for some of the opportunities. Many people, especially early on, would say, thank you so much for sharing this, because, you know, we always felt like city contracting was an old boys club, or people would pick who they wanted for things, and you know, it was based on friendships and nepotism and whatnot. But we want to make sure that everyone knows. So we've focused a lot on educating women business owners, minority business owners, about the process. And the process, like you told people to visit our website, starts when you visit the City of Chattanooga website. We teach people how to go on the site, how to find what goods and services the city is purchasing, how to interpret those bid documents, and even how to complete the bids in some situations. We've done lots to just be more transparent. So if you, for example, wanted to get a city lawn contract right now, you could come to city government, to our purchasing office, and we have people who will actually show you the previous winning bids for all of the lawn contracts. That way you can look at the pricing that won and really inform yourself about what pricing you should use, how you should approach the bid, and go for it. So we work, I would say, on a quarterly basis and do at least 2 to 3 sessions a quarter just about how to do business with the city. And we do it for different communities. We've done it for Asian business owners locally. And I'm excited because in November, we'll be doing a workshop for our Latino business owners in the city, and it's going to be all in Spanish. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah.
So where can people, is all that information on your website as far as when these sort of workshops happen?
So the workshop calendar is not necessarily on the website. What we do is we invite people to join our mailing list. Okay. And you can do that. It's an email list. You can email oma@chattanooga.gov. And once you're part of the list, then we begin to share the information that way. And we also share information on Facebook and social media. Our purchasing department has a Twitter account where they share information about bids that are open. So we try to get a lot of it out that way. But honestly, we still have to do a lot of, I would call it, street outreach and hand out flyers and take flyers places and just share the information with people.
Yeah. Well, do you have any, kind of statistics? Because I know the number of minority-owned businesses that are working with the city has grown substantially within the last 3 years. What do those numbers look like?
Well, when we first, 3 years ago, tried to evaluate it, it was very difficult, and we came in about 1% or 2%. Now we consistently do, I would say, 10% to 12.5% of our business with women and minority businesses. Our goal is 14%. There was one summer that we did reach that goal. It was mostly because we had some huge summer programs going on, and we engaged lots of minority vendors as food vendors and independent consultants. But we struggle to meet the 14%. But I mean, we push, and it's really a two-way street. You know, we give the information, but we need businesses to kind of pursue the events and actually follow through the process so that we can meet in the middle for success.
Yeah, and be competitive within that process as well. So yeah, there's several things to go into it. But yeah, like you're saying, education is such a huge piece of that puzzle just to even get started. Do you have any idea what the percent of businesses in Chattanooga are minority owned?
So we really don't. And that's one of the glaring omissions in all of this information. Because when you start a business and go get your business license, they don't ask you about race or minority status. So we don't really have a baseline to build from when it comes to that actual number. Now, what I will tell you is about 4 months ago, we began surveying minority businesses, and we actually have 152 of those that we've surveyed so far. So I would say that that's not a great indicator of how many are here, but it's probably the most that have ever been surveyed and had information collected from them. And we're using that information to design our programs and services that we offer over the year.
Well, I think the last thing that I really want to talk to you more about is that, arts and culture falls under the multicultural affairs. I'm curious in some of the programs that you should run through that, but also some of the larger programs in Chattanooga, some of the larger organizations. So does that mean Public Art Chattanooga falls under the Office of Multicultural Affairs?
Public art is actually part of the mayor's office, but it's not part of multicultural affairs. When we say arts and culture, we're more so thinking about how art and culture are really intertwined, you know. An example of that is we work very hard with sister cities to build some of our international relations. Many people don't know that we have a project where citizens from Chattanooga go and work in City Hall in Wolfsburg, Germany, or Hamm, Germany. We're hoping to make sure that people are able to go work in Japan this summer. And we have interns from those countries who come in the summers and work in our city government, too. So to me, that's like a cultural exchange. So we work that angle. We also have built relations with those same sister cities, and now we have people running our marathon from Italy and Germany, and then we have Chattanoogans who go to Italy and Germany and run in our sister city marathons. So we're building those person-to-person exchanges. But when it comes to art and culture, an example of something that has come about from that is there are, in Japan, there are these special door hangings called Norin. And when you walk through a door, you kind of push the Norin flaps to the side and come through. And some of them might have an advertisement, some might have a beautiful image. So when we were in Japan not long ago working on some of these exchanges, and I was really fascinated by the Norin, and I bought one to bring home with me for my house. But just sitting around one day, I was like, you know, we do all these art exhibits in City Hall. We could have a Norin exhibit. Yeah. And I was thinking at it, you know, like it's going to be cheap to roll up a lot of, you know, pieces of fabric so I don't have to worry about huge international shipping expenses. Yeah. And the people that we worked with in Japan, they actually got citizens to donate their favorite Norin for this exhibit. So in January at City Hall, we'll have an exhibit of those Norin. They'll be hanging on the walls. And it's coinciding with some of our Japanese friends coming to the city for 3 days. So they'll get to see, you know, us showing part of their culture in City Hall. And just like they were able to show us their Japanese culture when we were in Japan. So we do those types of arts and cultural things.
Well, that's incredible. I mean, what I love about that Norin exhibit, too, is how populist it is. Like, yeah. That it's citizens giving their favorite one. that's really cool. That's something that you're not going to see ever in a museum or anything like that either.
Because these are from real citizens, yeah. You know. So I'm probably going to start doing publicity for that soon. And it's something I'm excited about. But we exhibit art all the time in City Hall. We have right now an art exhibit from Boys to Men, which is a young men's group that teaches about leadership and academics.
Wait, so not the 90s?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, these are more local, I would say. But a local artist and arts administrator named Charlie Newton, he taught a group of the boys about a particular artist who was part of the Afro-Cobra movement. And I'm not sure if people know about Afro-Cobra, but you should look it up. It was an African-American art movement that was kind of coincided with the Black Power movement. There's lots of color and lots of expression, lots of Black Power imagery. And he taught them about a particular artist, and then they worked and painted things like that artist. So we have those on display. We've had art on display from Heart Gallery, which works with a lot of our disabled and homeless community. We've had art from Open Arms Care. We've had a group of women artists from La Paz who've exhibited. So it's really about using the arts as a way to explore culture, but also using the physical space of City Hall to show, you know, to welcome different groups and different types of people in and say, look at what our citizens can do.
Yeah. All right, James. Well, thanks for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you again to James for stopping in and really discussing more about the city government's Office of Multicultural Affairs. You know, I don't know about you, but until the last couple of years, I hadn't really heard of the Office of Multicultural Affairs. So I don't think it's an unfair thing to say that this is one of the lesser known branches of our city government. But now after this interview, hopefully you have a better understanding of the ways in which this office seeks to cultivate an environment of understanding, respect, and equality here in Chattanooga. And you can always learn more about them at chattanooga.gov, and then under departments, select Office of Multicultural Affairs. Well, thank you so much to our studio sponsor, Lamppost Group. You can learn more about them at lamppostgroup.com. And thank you all for being here. You know, you can always share this episode or any of our episodes at thecamphouse.com/podcast. So thanks for being here. I hope you have a great day, and we'll see you again here next week.